And this is, we're at a very, very dangerous place for the whole human race at this point.
Well, besides the drugs used in the MK Ultra program, I saw an earlier interview that you had done. You talked about child abuse techniques also used. Can you expand on that for me?
When you have individuals in society that get off on having power over others as a mechanism of an effect of satisfaction to the psyche, most of the time it's because they're disassociated from previous childhood that they experienced as a youngster. Whether it was sanctioned by the government or done through a program, these type of individuals come into power, and then what ends up happening is they have no empathy or even feeling for anything outside of themselves, because they've been fractured themselves. And everybody has heard the term, you know, those that have been abused abuse. And this is what we have today. And it was weaponized, MK Ultra, and all the programs associated with it, MK Naomi and all the others, were utilized against the public to capture America and then the world.
Well, you just mentioned about mind control techniques transcending. And you've also said about the role technology plays in all of this, technology and media. Let's talk about this a little bit. What do you mean exactly?
Marshall McLuhan wrote Understanding Media. He spoke before the Bilderbergs and most powerful people in the world on the effects of technology on human perception. And this is a very important piece of the puzzle in understanding mind control, is being understand the what's known today as media ecology, which is the study of human perception and its marriage to technology. And we knew in the early 90s, when they began to outer the inner, that's it's called, of the central nervous system outside of the body via the computer, the media extension of our central nervous system, our handheld computers, that was the beginning of the end. And human perception would be altered forever because of that, all of which was planned by DARPA and the military industrial complex quite some time ago. So if people are trying to understand how this functions, they really need to study the works of Marshall McLuhan and other media theorists in the communications field, so they understand how human perception is altered through media environments, such as the television, the book, the computer, any media extension of the human psyche alters it. And they're aware of that. All the intelligence agencies were all told this in the 50s. They figured it all out, and they slowly utilized technology to alter and steer obsolescence and human perception and attention span, because now we're in an attention economy. And that's been offset by the amplification of our central nervous system to put us into an anticipation state all the time of receiving a text, receiving a message, receiving. And this is ADHD is an effect of the post-information environment and the computer, which we spoke about in Operation Mind Control.
I mean, if what you're saying is true in your perspective, what can be done to counter these measures?
It's incredibly damaging. I have kind of stayed away from a lot of the news, as I did a media fast by design to unplug myself from everything. And that's what you need to do to have contrast and being able to survive in a post-information environment, where everything now is inverted, information's moving at the speed of light, everything changes every second, human perception is being engineered and designed, and we've got the birth of the cybernetic being now, which is completely, totally different than what was previously there 5-10 years ago. We have different humans now. The days of the organic biological entity that we call a human being, it's gone. It's been re-engineered. Now it's being done genetically. So mind control now is not just taking over the mind, it's taking over the entire biology of an individual and re-engineering it. for either extermination or for some policy to support the state. So the most important, not discussed issue of our time right now is the liberation of the human condition and what it is to be human, because a lot of us don't know anymore, because we've been so damaged by the technology that's been inserted into the public. I mean, you've spoken to enough people and watched culture close enough yourself to see that what's been done to our children just by the interfacing of technology and their development years. What, you know, a lot of children grew up with a cell phone in their hand. That's a completely different reality and a different nervous system. Their nervous systems have been retuned for something else. They've been retuned to blend in so that their memories and personality will be on the cloud in the future. So the big discussion is, and should be all over the world, is where are we going, what are we doing, and why are we doing it based upon a few people's idea of what a human being should be.
It's really amazing what you're saying. Do you have any final thoughts?
Freedom of your mind and the liberation of the human condition, this is the high ground of the military-industrial complex and the New World Order. And if you do not, and people do not, address these issues, now you're not going to have free will. You're not going to have freedom. You're not going to have a right to rule and create a future that you want. This is, a lot of people have sacrificed to bring this information to the public a long time ago, and people have really put themselves out there because they know at this moment in our history, this is the crossroads of either the beginning and liberation of the human condition or the complete and total slavery of it. So I would suggest everybody start to examine it and take a real close look at it and start taking action from themselves. Don't expect any elected employee to do anything, because they've failed miserably, totally, completely. Specifically, I'm talking about the United States. Take it upon the individual self to take control of their own reality, take full responsibility, and then move ahead. That's what I suggest. That's my leading party message for everybody.
Well, thank you very much, James Martinez, for a very interesting discussion. Well, listening to Mr. Martinez can only make us wonder how controlled all of our minds are right now. We're also connected to our screens. Is this the new form of brainwashing? Well, the original sin of torturing people and destroying thousands of lives was really never addressed. There were some families who were compensated, but the majority were not. And of course, the victims can never, ever be fully compensated. Now, this brings up the question that although the CIA says its MKUltra program no longer exists, what would stop it from using other inhumane techniques to reach a goal? It used biological warfare in the past and never really had to pay for it. What does that mean for us today? Are they in the business of creating germ warfare? It was said that the MKUltra program was so extensive that it even developed biological weapons in the form of aerosol sprays, and that all types of poisons and drugs were created, combined, and tested on humans. And that was then, in the 1950s and 60s. What about now?
March 16th, 2018. The U.S. government's Defense Advanced Research Projects Agency, commonly known as DARPA, announces a bold initiative to develop what they call next-generation non-surgical neurotechnology. It is designed to allow the human brain to directly interface with machines.
We know that DARPA is exploring human-machine interfaces that include direct connections between the brain and outside systems. That's been from the beginning of DARPA's information technology mission, and it continues to this day. DARPA has created some of the most influential technologies of all time, things that we use and take for granted every day, including the project that became the internet, They've created self-driving cars, stealth technology, GPS that fits in your pocket. That's DARPA's specialty, to imagine the future and create it.
A new technology that is actually very much on the verge of being a reality that is being fielded is we could have a sensor maybe on the surface of our head, or maybe implanted somewhere in our body, in our brain or something, that allows us to interact directly with our communications gear, our processing gear, our weapon systems, and so on. But now imagine we take that technology and we can control robots at a distance with it. Even fly drones. You put this sensor on and you think the right way and you can increase the speed of the fan by thinking and controlling that thought with direct-to-mind or mind-machine interfacing. With that type of capability, you could control all sorts of buttons and mechanisms in equipment.
Mind-machine interfaces will have many applications in both civilian and military life. But there are those who believe that this same technology could also be used by DARPA as a new form of mind control. Like their counterparts at the CIA, DARPA-funded researchers have spent decades investigating how the human mind can be altered. In 1965, DARPA launched Project Pandora, which studied the possibility of using microwave radiation to control human behavior. The project reportedly ended in 1969, but DARPA's investigation of how machines can affect and possibly control the brain continues to this day.
750,000 dollars. That's how much the Olson family was compensated for the assassination of Frank Olson by the CIA back in 1975, which is ironic because it seems the only murder that was compensated and apologized for in this manner was the murder of a scientist who himself was guilty of creating bioweapons responsible for the murder of many others. Well, in Canada alone, of the 300 victims who filed for compensation, 250 were turned down with the excuse of not having been affected badly enough, or for filing too late, or for the lack of medical records, which the CIA had conveniently destroyed. But these victims are only a fraction of those who were severely injured and killed by the similar scientific experiments on human beings without their knowledge and consent. Because in addition to these human guinea pigs and the some 7,000 U.S. soldiers used for these experiments, there were thousands more who paid the price for the projects approved by the American government. People in Korea and elsewhere who received the final product which resulted from these experiments. The most voiceless victims of the CIA's biological warfare were these non-Americans whose suffering didn't seem to be an area of concern, as they were citizens of the so-called enemy countries. You see, the most dangerous brainwashing method is not that which was done using LSD and other drugs and terror techniques, but the media propaganda that dictates to people every single day which lives should matter and which ones are simply all the expendables. Perhaps it's time for us to unplug ourselves from all the noise, from the screens, and give our minds time to process what is reality and what is a creation of cyberspace. Be able to discern the real from the created is the test of the day. And depending on how well we score, it can help determine if we can free our minds or simply behave like a puppet on a string, giving into the whims and directions of others on the web. Well, with that, it brings us to the end of this week's show. And we hope you will be joining us for our next Hidden Files. I'm Marzia Hashmi, signing out for myself and all the crew right here in Tehran. Goodbye for now.
Your option, our task. Visit us at parstoday.ir/en. IRIB English Radio. In the Limelight.
Former U.S. President Donald Trump has excoriated President Joe Biden and his son Hunter over the discovery of cocaine in the White House, suggesting it may have belonged to them. Donald Trump also charged Biden with being a corrupt, incompetent leader who has been compromised by China and Ukraine. We take a look at some of the world press and media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. The British newspaper The Daily Mail has covered this story and tells us more. Former US President Donald Trump charged President Joe Biden with being a corrupt, incompetent leader who has been compromised by China and Ukraine. Addressing a gathering of Republican volunteers in Las Vegas, Nevada, Donald Trump spent 40 minutes discussing the border, economy and crime. He attacked his Republican rival Ron DeSantis as highly overrated and said, "He has no personality." But he saved his strongest condemnation for President Biden, declaring that the gloves are off. He then went to a UFC match at the T-Mobile Arena with Dana White, president of UFC, Roger Stone, veteran Republican operative, and Hollywood actor Mel Gibson. Donald Trump said, "We have a corrupt, incompetent leader in the White House," he added, "and I wouldn't have said this a few weeks ago." Trump claimed that the president has taken millions of dollars from other countries like China. He added, "He's totally compromised. In history, there has never been a scandal like this." Donald Trump said the fake news media was covering it up, claiming that President Biden had taken $10,200,000 from China and millions of dollars from Ukraine. He added, "These are compromised people." Donald Trump used his speech to rail against Ron DeSantis' track record in Florida. He said, "I'm not a big fan of his, and he's highly overrated." He said, "Remember, he's the one that wanted to cut Social Security. He's the one that wanted to raise the minimum wage, and he voted on this." Trump added, "This isn't just the one thing that you have to remember when a politician comes out with an initial plan, and then they go into a corner because they're getting killed, because he's getting killed." Trump added, "Well, he also has no personality. That helps, right?" Donald Trump lost Nevada in two consecutive presidential campaigns, with Joe Biden winning by almost 3 percentage points in the 2020 election. The Trump campaign is now turning its attention to the battleground state of Nevada. The former President Donald Trump on Saturday, 8th of July, hinted at this challenge. Trump said, "We have a big job to do. This has been a hard state. I really believe it's a Republican state." He added, "This is the most important election in the history of our country." It comes as President Biden was seen on Saturday, 8th of July, at the beach near his Delaware home. The president and his family relaxed under a sun lounger under the watchful eyes of their Secret Service detail. President Biden's son, Hunter, 52 years old, was not with the group. Meanwhile, the Biden administration continues to refuse to address the scandal of cocaine being found in the White House. The first family were enjoying the beach as the Secret Service continued its investigation into who brought a bag of cocaine into the White House. The dime-sized bag was discovered recently while the president and his recovering cocaine addict son, Hunter, were at Camp David in Maryland for the weekend. The Secret Service are carrying out DNA and fingerprint analysis to try and find out who brought the cocaine into the White House. Cable broadcaster Cable News Network CNN has also covered this story and tells us more. Former U.S. President Donald Trump roasted President Joe Biden and his son over the discovery of cocaine in the White House, suggesting it may have belonged to them. According to U.S. officials, none of the Bidens were present at the time that stash of cocaine was found. Recently, Secret Service agents found a small zippered bag containing a white powder inside the west wing of the White House, prompting an evacuation of the building. Later, a Secret Service official confirmed to CNN that the powder was indeed cocaine. Commenting on the matter, White House Press Secretary Karine Jean-Pierre said the Biden administration is confident the investigation will get to the bottom of the incident, noting that the substance was found in a heavily traveled area of the White House, which regularly sees many visitors. However, Donald Trump offered a different take on the incident. The former president wrote on his page on Truth Social on Wednesday, 5th of July, "Does anybody really believe that the cocaine found in the West Wing of the White House, very close to the Oval Office, is for the use of anyone other than Hunter and Joe Biden?" He also predicted that the fake news media will soon start saying that the amount found was very small, and it wasn't really cocaine, but an approved drug like aspirin, and the story will vanish. Donald Trump, who announced plans to seek re-election last autumn, triggering widespread expectations of a 2024 rematch with Joe Biden, was not the only Republican to mock the U.S. administration over the drug bust. The governor of Florida, Ron DeSantis, another contender in the 2024 presidential race, said recently, "I think a lot of us have believed that the Biden administration's been blowing it on a lot of fronts, but I guess it's a little bit more literal than ever I had thought." On Wednesday, a source familiar with the ongoing investigation told the website Politico that the chances of finding the culprit are slim. The person suggested that even if there were surveillance cameras, it would have been difficult to identify the owner of cocaine unless he was waving it around. The New York Post has also covered the same story and tells us more. The White House batted away new lines of questioning on Thursday, 6th of July, about cocaine discovered at the White House, with a spokesman invoking the Hatch Act to avoid giving a direct answer to a charge leveled by Donald Trump. White House spokesman Andrew Bates was asked about pretty wild posts by former President Donald Trump, who claimed the cocaine discovered at the White House belonged to the president and his son, Hunter, who has acknowledged illegal drug use in the past, but says he's clean now. Invoking the law barring politicking by government officials during their official duties, Andrew Bates responded, "I don't have a response to that because we have to be careful about the Hatch Act." White House Press Secretary Karine Jean-Pierre has regularly used the law as a crutch during briefings, but recently got her own warning about running afoul of its intricacies from the Office of Special Counsel. Then, White House spokesman Andrew Bates tried to turn the tables and use Donald Trump's cocaine attack to land a blow on the former president. He said, "What I will say is that I have noticed there does seem to be some increasing frustration coming from that corner in general, and I think it is probably rooted in the contrast between their substantive policy records." He talked about job growth in manufacturing and infrastructure investments, which Biden plans to tout on a trip to South Carolina. He said infrastructure is no longer a punchline, referencing the Trump-era infrastructure weeks. Andrew Bates added, "We have doubled the construction of manufacturing facilities in just 2.5 years, whereas during the previous administration, it only grew at an anemic 2%. The effort to shift the terrain was one of several times he failed to provide new information when asked about the stunning cocaine discovery at the White House.
The wildfires in Greece, Turkey, the United States.
Palestinian prisoners in Israeli jails continue to engage in hunger strikes.
Kim Yo-jong, the powerful sister of North Korean leader.
On the news line.
Crossing a new threshold in the type of weaponry supplied to Kiev, the United States on Friday announced it will provide the internationally banned cluster munitions to Ukraine.
In this environment, Ukraine has been requesting cluster munitions in order to defend its own sovereign territory. The cluster munitions that we would provide have dud rates far below what Russia is doing, is providing, not higher than 2.5%.
Sullivan said Ukraine would not be using the munitions in a foreign land. He added that Kiev has provided assurances in writing that the weapons will be used carefully to minimize risks to civilian lives. U.S. President Joe Biden defended the decision, saying it was because the efforts to defend against Russia had run out of ammunition. The move drew an instant reaction from the United Nations.
The Secretary General supports the Convention on Cluster Munitions, which, as you know, was adopted 15 years ago, and he wants countries to abide by the terms of that convention. And so as a result, of course, he does not want there to be continued use of cluster munitions on the battlefield.
A number of key U.S. allies defied Washington's decision to supply cluster munitions to Kiev.
Well, the UK is signatory to a convention which prohibits the production or use of cluster munitions and discourages their use. We will continue to do our part to support Ukraine against Russia's illegal and unprovoked invasion.
Sunak made the comments in an address to reporters. Spain also followed suit, saying that certain weapons and bombs cannot be delivered under any circumstances. France reiterated its opposition to the use of the controversial weapon. Germany said the decision goes against the Convention of Cluster Munitions that bans such weapons on the battlefield. Neither the United States nor Ukraine is party to the pact. Russia strongly condemned the move. In a statement, Russian Foreign Ministry spokeswoman Maria Zakharova said it is an act of desperation and shows weakness against the backdrop of the failure of the much-touted Ukrainian counteroffensive. Zakharova added the decision showed the aggressive anti-Russian course taken by the U.S., which is aimed at prolonging the conflict in Ukraine as much as possible. Tehran also lambasted the move. Foreign Ministry spokesman Nasser Kanani said the U.S. decision to send cluster bombs to Ukraine shows Washington's determination to perpetuate and further complicate the war in Ukraine. Inside the U.S., congressional Democrats raised concerns over the move. Senators Barbara Lee and Tim Kaine said Washington's decision to set cluster bombs to Ukraine could inspire other countries to sidestep an international convention barring such munitions. Supplying Kiev with cluster munitions comes as the armaments are highly controversial weapons that typically release large number of smaller bomblets, which can kill indiscriminately over a wide area. Those that go undetonated potentially endanger civilians for years to come. Cluster munitions are banned by over 100 countries. The supply of such weapons bring Washington's total aid to Ukraine to more than $40 billion since the Ukraine war began in February 2022. In total, the United States and its allies have provided Ukraine with numerous military aid packages worth hundreds of billions of dollars. The military support for Ukraine includes the delivery of heavy and light military weapons and ammunition, as well as non-lethal material military aid. Those weapons are sent to Kiev, regardless of the fact that Russia has time and again warned that such a trend would only prolong the conflict and cause more destruction on both sides. But Ukraine allies seem to be more concerned about Kiev's failure on the battlefield and have consequently kept pumping Kiev full of advanced weapons. Those weapons not only have failed to prevent the conflict from getting exacerbated, but instead they have led to even more escalation on both sides. With Ukraine's so-called counteroffensive now it's in second months, Kiev has announced gains during its attacks on Russian forces. Ukraine says a number of villages have been liberated thanks to its counteroffensive. Russia, in the meantime, has targeted positions belonging to Ukraine using missiles, causing death and destruction in several areas. All in all, by supplying Ukraine with the internationally banned cluster munitions, the United States is taking two huge risks. One is simply prolonging the war, as Russia has numerously reiterated. And two is possibly getting Washington involved in the conflict. And that's what many throughout the globe prefer not to pick, given its potential global catastrophic consequences.
The U.S. Treasury Secretary has wrapped up a four-day visit to China with the aim of opening the line of communication and bringing long-running tensions between Washington and Beijing to an end.
A number of issues, including climate and U.S. restrictions on Chinese chip industry, were among topics discussed during the first 2 days of Janet Yellen's visit. But economy and trade co-centered the issues discussed. The U.S. official during the visit said she went to China to deepen communication and work toward a stable and constructive relationship between the two countries.
Amid a complicated global economic outlook, there is a pressing need for the two largest economies to closely communicate and exchange views on our responses to various challenges.
Yellen said, "We believe that it is in the best interest of both countries to make sure that we have direct and clear lines of communication at senior levels." Yellen also took aim at China's planned economy, urging Beijing to turn to more market-oriented practices. She suggested that a shift toward market reforms would be in China's interests. The U.S. Treasury Secretary also held a meeting with Chinese Vice Premier He Lifeng. During the meeting, Yellen said Washington and Beijing must communicate directly when they have concerns about each other's specific economic practices. Yellen noted that the United States and China, the world's two biggest economies, must compete fairly and communicate closely to avoid misunderstandings. Yellen stressed that Washington is not seeking a winner-take-all approach or economic advantage in its relations with Beijing, but wanted to ensure a healthy competition with what she called a fair set of rules that would benefit both countries over time. Yellen's trip is part of a flurry of visits U.S. authorities claim will ease tensions between Washington and Beijing. Last month, U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken visited China and held high-level discussions with Chinese officials, including President Xi Jinping. The two officials agreed that the mutual rivalry should not turn into conflict. The visit came ahead of a possible meeting between U.S. President Joe Biden and President Xi as soon as September's G20 summit in New Delhi. Janet Yellen's visit to China comes as Washington and Beijing are already at odds over a string of issues. Apart from economy and trade, one core still unresolved problem between the two powers is the issue of Taiwan. Tensions over Taiwan have been escalating ever since the United States enhanced its military buildup in the South China Sea in an effort to contain Beijing. After all, China has territorial claims over the self-ruled island and has warned against any move that jeopardizes its sovereignty and territorial integrity. But regardless of those elements, Washington has continued with its collision course with Beijing over the issue of Taiwan. Testimony to that was a trade deal the U.S. struck with Taiwan to deepen economic relations between both sides, a move that sparked a stern warning from Beijing. China strongly lashed out at the U.S., calling on Washington to stop official exchanges with Taiwan under the guise of trade. Other than the trade deal with Taiwan, Washington also held joint massive drills with other countries, including Canada, in the South China Sea, despite repeated warnings from Beijing against any such moves. Not to mention that U.S. vessels have repeatedly sailed through the Taiwan Strait, drawing outrage from China. The recent tensions have prompted Chinese officials to question the U.S. presence in the Asia-Pacific region. Chinese Defense Ministry has called on Washington to pull its military presence away from areas near China. Indeed, the question that arises is that how would the United States react if Chinese destroyers sail through areas close to U.S. borders in the North Atlantic or the North Pacific Oceans or anywhere near the Gulf of Mexico? Given all such differences, what comes to the spotlight is the aim of Yellen's visit to Beijing and her meeting with Chinese officials. Many believe that the trip will bring no tangible results since the two biggest powers have so far not been able to resolve their most fundamental problems, including the Taiwan issue. What further complicates the situation is the respect the United States does not have for international law when it comes to its own interests. Taking that into consideration, any such trip aimed at easing tensions will be senseless.
The U.S. has made a decision that it will send Ukraine the deadly cluster munitions. The U.S. went on a media blitz to make its case that its decision was justified. From the White House to the Pentagon,
I'm as concerned about the humanitarian circumstance as anybody. But the worst thing for civilians in Ukraine is for Russia to win the war.
To Jake Sullivan, President Joe Biden's national security advisor.
And I'm not going to stand up here and say it is easy. It's a difficult decision. It's a decision we deferred. It's a decision that required a real hard look at the potential harm to civilians.
But are there any doubts about why cluster munitions should not be used and why they are deadly? Cluster bombs carry several hundred bomblets or cluster munitions. Dropped by aircraft or launched from the ground, they're designed to be dispersed over a wide area, which can cover the size of several soccer fields. As they are free-falling, they can strike the ground at a considerable distance from the target area if they are not used correctly. And what makes cluster munitions so controversial is their impact on civilian populations.
The problem with cluster munitions is dud rate. Because these munitions drop large numbers of what are bomblets, depending on how they land, some of them don't go off and will hang around. And that number is anywhere from 2% on up, depending on the terrain. And civilians can happen upon these duds, and they can cause civilian casualties.
According to the International Committee of the Red Cross, up to 40% of cluster bombs result in unexploded rounds or duds, which can cause civilian deaths long after a conflict is over. The Convention on Cluster Munitions is a convention banning the use of cluster bombs and has been joined by more than 120 countries. The U.S., however, is not a signatory to this convention, even though it is a member of the Organization on the Prohibition of Chemical Weapons, OPCW. Decades after the conflict, they continue to kill. According to the group Handicap International, 98% of cluster bomb victims are civilians, and 27% are children. When the U.S. president was asked why he was providing the cluster munitions now, part of an $800 million security package, he said it was because Ukraine had run out of ammunition.
Mr. President, cluster munitions, why now?
Run out of ammunition.
The Secretary General supports the Convention on Cluster Munitions, which, as you know, was adopted 15 years ago. And he wants countries to abide by the terms of that convention. And so, as a result, of course, he does not want there to be continued use of cluster munitions on the battlefield.
The U.S.-backed Saudi war on Yemen. officially still not over. It has resulted in the death of hundreds of thousands. Some of those killed, which were mainly women and children, were a result of cluster munitions, courtesy of the U.S.
Children are the main victim of cluster bombs because the remains of the bombs come into forms of foreign and metallic luster objects and looks like toys. Victims usually lose their eyes and suffer from deformities in their bodies.
Yet, the U.S. use of cluster munitions have not been restricted to Yemen. The U.S. initially used cluster bombs during the invasion of Afghanistan that began in 2001. The U.S. dropped more than 1,500 cluster bombs in that country during the first 3 years of the occupation. It is very telling that not only did the U.S. not have any regard for using these outlawed bombs, but the amounts used showed complete disregard for human lives, particularly for women and children, who are still being murdered to this day. And it doesn't end there. The Biden administration has also agreed to provide Ukraine with depleted uranium shells to equip Abrams tanks that the U.S. is sending there. Britain has already delivered these tanks to Ukraine, equipped with depleted uranium shells. DU munitions developed in the 1970s are not nuclear weapons and do not produce a nuclear explosion, but soldiers or civilians can be exposed to the uranium either in combat or afterward. This was particularly the case in Iraq, when during the U.S. 2003 invasion, heavy use of depleted uranium caused many to die and suffer to this day of diseases which have led to things like birth defects. Instead of searching for a political solution, U.S. and U.K. governments clearly believe that providing DU munitions will improve Ukraine's ability to defeat Russian tanks and bring this conflict to an end. What is even more telling is that the U.S. has said that Ukraine has run out of ammo, in particular the 155mm howitzer, putting into question Ukraine's ability to continue this war. The 155mm howitzer round is one of the most requested artillery munitions of the Ukraine war. The U.S. has already shipped more than 1.5 million rounds to Ukraine, but Kiev is still seeking more. Even though both Russia and Ukraine have been accused of using cluster munitions, which have killed civilians on both sides, the Russian ambassador to the U.S., Anatoly Antonov, criticized the transfer of these weapons to Ukraine by the U.S. The cruelty and cynicism with which Washington has approached the issue of transferring lethal weapons to Kiev is striking. Now, by the fault of the U.S., there will be a risk for many years that innocent civilians will be blown up by submunitions that have failed. Do these civilians deserve this fate due to the U.S. desire to weaken Russia, the purported aim of the U.S. supporting Ukraine in this war?
Option for today and a better tomorrow. Our internet address is parstoday.ir/en. IRIB English Radio.
Human rights defenders have condemned the Zionist regime's planned West Bank settlement expansion. According to reports, the Netanyahu regime has informed the U.S. of plans to build thousands of new Jewish-only settler homes. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for more. Truthout noted, human rights defenders have recently blasted Israeli regime Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu's far-right apartheid government after it reportedly informed the Biden administration of plans to build thousands of new Jewish-only settler homes in the illegally occupied West Bank of Palestine. Three Israeli regime and U.S. officials told Axios that Israel will announce later this month its intention to build at least 4,000 homes in existing West Bank settler colonies. Recently, the Zionist and international media reported that Netanyahu's government would postpone plans for what's known as E1 project due to U.S. pressure. For two decades, the Zionist regime and international human rights experts have called the settlements, which are illegal under Article 49 of the Fourth Geneva Convention and the International Criminal Court's Rome Statute, part of the Zionist regime's apartheid. The seizure of Palestinian land in the occupied territories is also a war crime under the Rome Statute. The Zionist regime's finance minister, Bezalel Smotrich, who opined in 2021 that all, not just most, Arabs should have been ethnically cleansed from Palestine at Israel's birth, said during a recent press conference that we will have big news for the settlements in the West Bank imminently. This is while the Biden administration has largely turned a blind eye to the Zionist settlement construction and expansion, but says it is strongly opposed to E1 because it would reduce the Palestinian population in East Al-Quds and further diminish faint hopes of any so-called two-state solution. Adala, an Israel-based advocacy group for Arab minority rights, tweeted, "Since the new Israeli government was inaugurated in December 2022, it has taken a series of alarming steps to accelerate its annexation of the West Bank, aiming to fulfill its commitments to increase Jewish settlements and ultimately extend Israeli sovereignty across the West Bank." Adala asserted that the Zionist regime's new annexation moves entrench Jewish supremacy and apartheid in the West Bank by steps including the institutional transfer of authority from military to civilian government offices in order to dismantle the authority of the military administration, assert Israeli state sovereignty, and promote the settlements, the further regularization and expansion of illegal settlements, and the direct application of Israeli domestic law to the occupied West Bank. These are part of an explicit plan by Israel to annex Suaves of the West Bank and institute full Israeli sovereignty over them, Adala asserted, adding, they violate international law, including the Rome Statute, constituting crimes against humanity, war crimes, and a crime of aggression. The Zionist regime is blatantly violating international law with its annexation of the West Bank. The American government can and should materially pressure the Zionist regime to stop impeding on Palestinian human rights. The U.S. gives the Zionist regime around $3.8 billion in mostly unconditional military aid each year. According to the Middle East Eye, Axios reported recently that the Zionist regime informed the U.S. it plans to build 4,000 housing units in several existing West Bank settlements. The report comes after Israeli regime Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu's government shelved plans to expand a settlement east of Al-Quds, which, if constructed, would divide the occupied West Bank into two. The plans for E1 settlement project, which would see 3,412 housing units built for Israeli settlers on occupied Palestinian lands, would connect the Kfar Adumim and Male Adumim settlements with occupied East Al-Quds. The plan would effectively split the West Bank in half, isolating East Al-Quds from Palestinian communities in the West Bank and forcing Palestinians to make even lengthier detours to travel from one place to another, while allowing for settlements housing Israelis to expand. The U.S. and the European Union have long objected to the settlement plan, warning successive Israeli administrations not to move forward with the project. Under the Biden administration, Washington has issued statements in opposition to new Israeli regime settlement plans. In May, a U.S. State Department spokesperson rebuked the Zionist regime's government moves to legitimize the outpost of Homesh in occupied West Bank, originally established on private Palestinian land. The spokesperson claimed in a statement, "This order is inconsistent with both former Prime Minister Ariel Sharon's written commitment to the Bush administration in 2004 and the current Israeli government's commitment to the Biden administration," adding, "Advancing Israeli settlements in the West Bank is an obstacle to the achievement of a two-state solution." The Zionist regime has repeatedly ignored U.S. opposition when it comes to settlement expansion, including recently in February when the Zionist regime government announced it would be expanding Israeli settlements in the occupied West Bank. However, at the same time, Washington has moved to protect the Zionist regime's settlement policy, saying in that same month that it would oppose a resolution that would condemn Israeli settlements at the U.N. Security Council.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم
السلام عليكم ورحمة الله
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints
همه با وجود قده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم
All of us are opposed to the cancerous tumor Israel
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
This is the part of the speech delivered on December 17, 2008 by Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, the leader of the Islamic Republic of Iran on the occasion of Eid al-Ghadir. Millions of our Sunni brothers in Arab, African, and Asian countries were attracted to the Islamic Revolution, and this was a blow to the enemies of the Islamic Republic. The enemies suffered this blow due to the unity of Muslims and their attention to the Islamic Revolution. They now try to deflect the attention of the Muslims away from the Islamic Revolution. How do they try to achieve this goal? They try to do so by fomenting discord among Shia and Sunni Muslims. Today, one of the most important policies of the arrogant powers is to get some of the Arab governments of the region to cooperate with them and to oppose the Islamic Republic. They try to convince some of the Arab governments to oppose the Islamic Republic, both in regard to the nuclear issues and other issues. They hold meetings with the heads of these governments and sign deals with them, and plot against the Islamic Republic. The U.S. sometimes asks the Islamic countries about how willing they are to oppose the Islamic Republic. Their efforts are all aimed at fomenting discord.
دنیای اسلام یک نسخه امروز دارد و اون اتحاد.
The world of Islam has one single prescription today, and that is unity. This prescription exists in all Islamic countries. Nations should be united.
What the enemies can do on the political front is to force the heads of certain governments to oppose the Islamic Republic. They are unable to do anything besides that. The enemies cannot turn their hearts of the people of the Arab countries, Islamic countries, Palestine, and Iraq, away from the Islamic Republic. They cannot turn the hearts of these people away from the Islamic Republic. The only thing they can do is to force the heads of sub-governments to oppose the Islamic Republic. Of course, those governments also take certain considerations into account, and it is not the case that they will readily accept whatever the Zionists and the arrogant powers ask them to do. The enemies cannot change the mentality of the people towards the Islamic Republic. What can make them change their mentality towards the Islamic Republic? What can turn the hearts of Muslims away from the Iranian nation and the Islamic Republic? Discord and religious prejudice can turn the hearts of Muslims away from the Islamic Republic.
Allah, I want to thank you. That you've done for me through all my years. I've been lost. You guided me from all the ways that were wrong. Indeed, you gave me hope. Oh, Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that you've done.
Comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Rubashavit, Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Saeed Poreza, London.
Rasha Saglam, Istanbul.
Saeed Aminolemi, Kabul.
Shahanabad, Indian-administered Kashmir.
Around the world with reporters.
The wheels of the British economy are turning, but not fast enough. And the state of the job market is one indicator. The UK's Office for National Statistics says the unemployment rate jumped to 4% into 3 months to May this year, up from 3.8% previously, driven by wage rises and by people out of work for up to 12 months.
Well, employment levels are high, but the trouble with Britain is we got less people working than pre-COVID. So we got record levels in employment. We're not far off the record levels, but the number of people in jobs has gone down because we've got this sort of 600,000 to 900,000 people seem to have disappeared from the workforce.
Finance Minister Jeremy Hunt has put getting Britons back into work at the heart of his plan for economic growth. Yet more than a million people are still unemployed. Let's see how the UK economy compares with other advanced economies. The Paris-based Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development, OECD, says year-on-year inflation in the group of seven wealthy nations fell to 4.6% in May this year, down from 5.4% in April.